Joining us today on the Culture Catch, from CharityWater.org, Mr. Scott Harrison. Today's sponsor is Napa Piri. Explore the world of active sportswear. Visit them at NAPARIJRI.com. Joining us today on the Culture Catch, we're very honored to have the man behind Charity Water. Charity is Mr. Scott Harrison.
Thanks, Dusty. Nice to be here.
Scott, finally, we track you down. You've been a globe-trotting evangelist. Clean water. How did that happen? How did you... For people who don't know you, it's a really wonderful, wonderful story.
It's a long one, too.
Well, you can do the truncated version. I don't think people
Well, yeah, I guess I came into this strangely. You know, I did about a decade in New York as a nightclub promoter, throwing fashion parties and running around the world in the back of other people's private planes and living, you know, very selfishly and arrogantly. And a few years ago, on a beach in South America, sort of had a change of heart, I guess. Came back to my faith as a childhood, was a big part of it, and decided to just radically change my life and go live in the poorest country in the world. That was Liberia at the time. So
you do Doctors Without Borders?
I did. It was a similar thing. It was a group called Mercy Ships, and it was these doctors and surgeons from 40 different countries that would fly and give up their vacation time and operate on sort of the poorest of the poor. And they operated on a ship, so it was an old yacht, sort of monster 520-foot cruise liner that had been converted into a hospital. So they could sail into places and sort of have a place of infrastructure to operate from.
And you were on board as a photographer, right?
Yeah, and that was sort of funny, too, because I wasn't a photographer before. I had just, you know, I'd always taken good pictures and thought that that would be a great way to connect, you know, my nightlife friends and my sort of previous life to the work that they were doing. So I read the manual and the Nikon, you know, my way over there, and my first pictures weren't nearly as good as they probably are now. Practice makes better.
And also the subject matter, it's capturing the essence of the subject matter. And these are places where typically you're not going to see photographs.
Yeah, so it was absolutely the most shocking stuff that that anybody had ever seen. I guess I can plug the website. It's mercyglobal.com. And that was from that basically, you know, in living in a country with no doctors, or I think Liberia had one doctor for every 50,000 people. It's going to be too loud?
No.
Oh, one... So one doctor, Liberia had one doctor for every 50,000 people there. And, you know, here we have a doctor for 180 of us. So the stuff that we were seeing, the stuff I was photographing, were, you know, patients with 8-pound tumors, cleft lips that had never been corrected at birth, you know, on 40, 50-year-old men and women. People lame, you know, a 35-year-old woman that was blind, completely blind with cataracts. That could have been,
you know,
it was
a 20-minute,
and it was a simple procedure. It was a 20-minute operation. So I spent almost a year documenting the work of these surgeons, and, you know, before and after, you know, a patient would walk up blind and walk out the next day, you know, being able to see. I was sort of feeding all these images and stories, too, back to, you know, my friends in New York. And, you know, asking them to help the doctors and just really be aware of what was going on, you know, which is pretty much the opposite of what, you know, my life looked like. Or
the hedonistic New York style.
Exactly, or, you know, 8-pound tumors and, you know, 5,000 people standing in line to see our doctors, so.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that sort of led me to water. My best friend on the ship was the well digger. And Mercy Ships figured, you know, hey, it's great, we're here, we're a medical ship, but we're here, so why not also, you know, see if we can help out the communities? So, you know, you would go into these communities and you would see people drinking out of swamps. They'd be drinking green, brown, mucky water with bugs in it. And then we started sort of learning about water as a cause of disease, and 80% of all disease on the planet is caused by unsafe water or water-related contaminated water, sure. So, you know, I think the thought was, well, let's get to the root of the problem. And it was on a very small scale. I think it was, you know, 6 or 7 wells a year that my friend would just go in and he would train the villagers and the wells would get built. But that was sort of my first, you know, introduction to just how easy it was to touch a whole community with a very little amount of money.
And then the wells themselves, when you first started, what was it, $1,000 built a well?
There are a few grand.
You know, $1,000.
Liberia is probably one of the cheapest places to do a well, and you could do it for about $3,000. Now, we have wells that go up to $40,000, too, so it's not... Liberia is so cheap because the water table is so high. It's one of the wettest countries in the world. So you can dig down, you know, 20, 30 feet. The key is to protecting the groundwater. You know, it's bringing the clean water out. The surface water is generally just contaminated.
Right.
Contaminated by animals. But that's a whole other story.
Fertilizers, animals, and man-made products, et cetera, et cetera. But water, in general, is one of our most precious commodities. And a lot of people really overlook how contaminated even our waters have become in America, just from all the...
And the overuse, you know, I mean, it's not... there was just a big New York Times story when I was gone about, you know, the aquifers here drying up. And, you know, the water statistics, you know, the sound bites, there's 1.1 billion people now on the planet that don't have clean water drinks. So that's one in every 6 of us. And our use seems to be sort of going up. Americans are now using an average of 150 gallons a day. And those billion people don't have 5 gallons. So our goal is to get, you know, the billion people on the planet 1/30th of what we have and use every day. So that, you know, the gap is a staggering gap, and it's getting worse.
And how do we then educate the consumer in America to cut back?
You know, I think we just do that. There's a lot of great campaigns that are talking about water conservation. You know, if it was as simple as us saving water and other people in the middle of Africa getting water, you know, it'd be great. You know, everybody would. there's a saying in Africa: if it's mellow, keep it yellow. You know, we would probably use a lot less water to help people. But you know, unfortunately, it takes money in a lot of these communities to actually tap the water, and that's the irony. You know, I just came back from Ethiopia last week, and you know, there's about 50 million people there that don't have access to water, and they have a lot of groundwater. It's just, you know, people born into a village and they don't have, you know, they're making 50 cents a day. They're struggling just to stay alive, really. To, you know, soap would be a luxury. Mm. And a $4,000, $5,000 well is a dream, you know. And,
right.
And you know, you're born into a village without that expertise, without the technical or engineering expertise. And, you know, you don't have the collective resource. So that's what we're really doing. We're asking people here who were born into affluence to use that affluence and influence to help other communities, and you know, and if it's giving $20 or if it's giving $4,000 or $5,000, that's sort of been the message of water.
Well, explain the concept of how your organization actually utilizes the water. You know, I've seen it start out, because we've known each other for a couple of years now, from a very rudimentary presentation to where it's a little bit glossier, but still the message is the same.
We're getting better.
The same.
So you know, the light came on when I came back from this Mercy Ships experience with all these pictures of tumors, and I wasn't really sure what to do with them, because you know, photographers normally sell their work, and you know, certainly nobody wanted to buy, you know, pictures of 8-pound tumors. So I put up an exhibition really just to showcase the amazing work of the doctors and also the patients, who were these heroes to me, you know, people that had lived with incredible pain and suffering. And and then the show worked. So, you know, we did it in a gallery in Chelsea, and people gave they gave money. So that was the idea for Charity Water, was to I left Mercy Ships. I just had a slightly larger vision of helping more people. You know, I'm only 32, so I'm going to throw the rest of my life at something. I wanted it to be big. And it was just to do what worked. It was to use photos and videos and words of real people, you know, that needed help, and just and sort of put that out there to my friends and ask for their help. And then it was to prove all the work that was done. So the three things were, you know, really create awareness and educate people using the photos, and then to raise money. And we were really interested in raising money at small amounts, so not going after, you know, million-dollar grants, but getting people involved at a $10, $20 level, saying, hey, listen, you know, we can do something with your small amount of money that really has impact. And then the third thing would be just proving all the work done, so showing people what that money could do. So we called it Charity Water. We committed to give away 100% of all the money received, which meant we would have to go fund the organization separately, fund our trip.
Which is so opposite what most charities do.
It is.
10% only gets trickled into the charity itself.
There's a couple that are starting to use this model, and it's not that we run a free charity. We just get other people to pay those costs. And, you know, in the same way that, you know, you guys have some sponsors, which help, you know, get your message out to a wider audience.
Right.
So that's what we've looked to do. And then we decide, hey, let's sell a $20 bottle of water. Let's sort of, you know, let's come up with the icon of plenty here. I mean, you know, everybody walks around with Poland Spring bottles now, and they cost a couple bucks. So we said, you know, let's charge people 10 times what it's worth. Let's charge them $20, and we'll give all 20 to help someone they've never met get clean water. And the numbers worked out as well. Conservatively, for $20, I can give at least one person clean water through our project. Sometimes I can give two people. Sometimes I can give 2.5 people, depending on the cost of the well and the people it serves. And then, you know, it wasn't something that, you know, people wanted to necessarily buy at the ShopRite. So we looked for partners. We looked for hotels. We looked for boutiques, you know, to sort of put this bottle out there and say, you know, hey, we've got a goal of building a well. We want to sell 200 bottles to our customers. And it's worked.
Yeah, the very first one, you had, what, three different locations. You had 59th Street, Washington Square Park. You had the photos displayed. You had the dirty water displayed as well as your can.
Yeah, we like putting dirty water from our ponds and our rivers in big glass tanks and breaking down some of the diseases. You know, you wouldn't want to drink from the East River or the Hudson River, and you certainly wouldn't want to drink from Central Park Pond.
Right.
So
just
we've had
perspective
fun with that.
And you're right. You know, the visual is much more dynamic than just talking about it.
Yeah, and we just shot a public service announcement with Jennifer Connelly, where we had her take her kids up to Central Park. So, you know, the walk that is so common in Africa, and get nasty water for them, and then serve it to them. You know, and the kid looks at the water in this, you know, nice green water, and is like, you know, I don't want to drink this.
Right. The message is there. The message is there. Do you think that Americans, who are always, obviously Americans are the most charitable on the planet, there's no question that the fundraising, I mean, that in itself has got to be just a paramount challenge for you, because you're faced with so many other charities, and New Yorkers, you know, around the holidays, you get inundated with your mailbox with charity groups with their hands on it. How do you think you differentiate? Is it your passion and the organization?
You know, I think we're lucky in a lot of ways, because giving people clean water is so achievable. It's so it's provable. You know, if I was after, you know, empowering students to become better leaders, that's a harder thing to show you. Over 5 years or over 10 years, sure, it's possible. But, you know, what we're saying is like, hey, we just found 10 dirty communities. Here's where they're drinking. They're dying because they're drinking out of this pond. And there's groundwater here. Give us money. We're going to go dig holes in the ground, and we're going to show you what those holes look like. And we've been proving all the wells on Google Earth, so people can actually see exact GPS coordinates of wells that are built and see satellite pictures of the communities. So I think it's an easier thing to raise money for. We've had, you know, we've raised more than $2.5 million in about a year and a half. And, you know, the interesting thing about that money is it's been through more than, you know, 8,000 donors. So it's a lot of people getting involved, not just, you know, a foundation.
Just a couple people underwriting.
Yeah, I mean, we've got our first foundation grant, you know, which was a small one just recently. So
that's fantastic. The one thing I'm always fascinated by in these on the ground running charities is, how do you deal with the politics in these very corrupt governments where, our government sends the money, it never trickles down. You've got despots, leaders who, you know, would rather shoot you than allow for you to help the poor and the destitute.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question, and it's one that I think is on a lot of people's minds. The way that we work, the way the Charity Water works, is we'll go and find local organizations that have a proven history of working in a country. So in Ethiopia, we're dealing with Ethiopians. Some of them, you know, I guess the misnomer throughout Africa, we're working in 8 African countries now, so, you know, I know the climate of at least the 8 countries we're working in. The government is normally helping. The problem is just so big. You know, we've done projects where the government will... the government will come in and actually subsidize a project or say, hey, you know what, if you can get 60% together, we'll come in with 40%. And the community will sometimes say, well, we'll get 20% together, the government will go 40%. You know, can we get help from an outside donor? That is probably not true in Zimbabwe, where, you know, if I were to wire $10,000 into Zimbabwe, it's because of the exchange rate, it's possible that only $6,000 would get through. So, you know, we're not working in these war zones at the moment. We're actually not working in Sudan, although I've been wanting to find a way to help the people there, but we just haven't found, you know, the reliable way to get the water work done there. So, you know, it's a case-by-case basis, but I'd say that, you know, many of these governments, and sure, you know, the president may have 50 cars in some country, but that's not why 50 million people don't have water. You know, and generally the leaders in the parliament, you know, water is such a universal right, and I think it's acknowledged as such just intuitively to people that they are very supportive of an organization like ours saying, hey, you know, we want to, what can we do to help some of your people gain access to water? Will you partner with us? So that was a long answer to that question.
No, but it answers it. I mean, a basic human necessity, food, water, shelter, the 3 necessities.
You know, I just got back from India, too, where I traveled before Ethiopia, and I remember reading an article in The New Yorker a while ago about how just water is like the leveler. You know, if there was a minister or something, and he had a great job in the Indian government, and he lived in, you know, one of the cities, and the water came on for him like it did for everyone else between 2:30 and 3:30 in the morning. You know, and it's like, well, this guy has he has money, he has a nice job, but he lives in a part of town where there's no water. So, you know, generally the people like that are going to fight for water access, for the poor, for the rich and poor alike.
Yeah, when it affects them directly, of course. Any time a call to action impacts your life, you'll wave the flag.
And the other thing about doing water is, it's because the projects are they're micro projects. You know, a community well, again, we're talking $4,000 or $5,000. It's sort of under the radar. You're not coming in saying, you know, we want to put $10 million of development and we want to take out resources. You know, it's like, no, we want to go help these 20 villages, you know, put a well in. Or, you know, we just did our most expensive project, which is a hospital well. And it was a deep well, and we ran pipes and into a storage tank. You know, $45,000. I mean, that's peanuts. The government is like, please spend $45,000 and give a hospital, you know, clean water. Because we have a list of 5,000 right now that need clean water. So if you can help us, you know, we're trying. Could they be doing a better job in many countries? Yes. But... No, it's the people that are suffering, that are born into these rural communities, and even sometimes in the slums.
And these small steps lead to bigger steps. Scott, are you having success with some of these charity groups saying, hey, we're going to earmark some of our funding from next year or for the next quarter towards your efforts, or we want to augment our efforts with your efforts?
You know, to tell you the truth, Dusty, it hasn't been dealing with many charity groups at all. It's been individuals. So guys have said, hey, next year I want my company to build a bunch of wells.
Okay.
And I had a breakfast meeting this morning, and, you know, it was a guy from L.A., and he said, I'll get 199 of my friends to give me $20, and we'll go build a $4,000 well. And the guy could give me $4,000
right now.
Yeah. And he may spend that today. But the important thing was that he got it. He's like, no, I want to get 199 other people involved in this process. You know, we all have 20. And sort of tell them a story of what $4,000 can do. And I'll go and I'll, you know, take a picture of his well and send it back, and hopefully it'll be a powerful experience for those 200 people. So yeah, we've had a lot of people approach us about wanting to, you know, creatively integrate Charity Water into their businesses. And, you know, we had a 7-year-old kid just raised, you know, $2,500 or something. Yeah, he's 7. You know, I was like pulling girls' hair at 7 years old, not, you know, building wells in Africa. But, you know, he creatively asked his parents and his friends for money.
It's a real Johnny Appleseed, I think. And that's what's infectious, I think, about your project. I watched you germinate this idea to where it is today, and you're really infectious. I mean, and you're being pulled at by 17,000 different people right now. Seven different continents, I'm sure.
Well, it's an honor to be able to do it. You know?
Yeah.
And walking into a village that had, you know, didn't have any clean water 6 months ago and does now is, you know, I mean, it makes you think you'd do it all for one village.
Now, you know, I just came, I took my kids to the water exhibit at the Museum of Natural History. And one of the things that really struck me is this new, these new systems of, and we started in India, as you know, of taking contaminated water and purifying it. And just doing it, using the ultraviolet light of the sun to clean the water, which is just extraordinary to me. Such a simple, simple solution to contaminated water in these third world countries. Have you thought about utilizing some of these techniques in the coming future?
It is. You know, there's the UV technology was really interesting. And then there's also something called biosand filters, which we're seeing a lot of. And that's, you know, the UV is sort of self-explanatory. It's, you know, it's putting, you know, basically water out long enough, you know, sometimes hitting it with reflectors and mirrors and stuff. But, you know, letting the sun take out the nasty stuff, the contaminants in the water. And then biosand is sort of pouring it through a very crude level of sand, gravel, and rock. And the same thing, 99% of the impurities are out of the water. So we're starting to look at. I've been sort of dying to find the biosand filter project because it's different than a well. You know, it's about a $20 a household, you know, $25 expense.
That's it.
But what's so neat is that it's the most micro level. You know, if you can get the household to buy in that this water, you know, that this is cleaning their water, it's essential to the health of their family. It's like you've got a believer for life. And you know, the upkeep on these things is sweeping out the muck once a month. So I think a lot of it, you know, the key to the UV is just going to be education. You know, a lot of these people, they just don't know. You know, it's all you have. So for us to go in and say, well, oh my gosh, you've lost four kids to diarrhea. It's like, well, that's because of the water they're drinking. But, you know, it's a longer process sometimes to, you know, to explain to someone, okay, well, if you did put your water out for a couple days in the sun, you know, it would make it a lot better.
Right.
That takes work.
Right. But you've got the leg up. You've got the ability to move forward with these concepts. How about you're working with just basic toilets?
Yeah, so that's out. So you know, on a personal level, I guess, and a professional level, the more I learn about water, the more important sanitation is just inextricably linked to clean water. And you know, even in the numbers, you know, you talk about 1 billion people that don't have water. Well, 2.5 billion people don't have a toilet. You know, that's 40% of the world doesn't have access to a toilet. You know, and I was just in London for a day on my way back, meeting with our trustees there. And you know, I'm walking through, and it's like I see public toilets everywhere, and there's signs on them saying like, you know, get stuck in London and need a place to pee, text, you know, toilet or something, and we'll tell you where the nearest one is. And you know, such a disconnect from, you know, from villages that don't have even a pit latrine. So we're starting to really tie sanitation into the water project. So, you know, we might do a well for $3,000 and spend another $1,000 doing hygiene training, teaching about hand washing, and then latrines, and building latrines and providing, you know, just money for cement. You want community buy-in there. You want the community to do the work. You want them to understand. And then you want it used, you know. To be quite honest, I've seen plenty of latrines across Africa that were used for granaries, you know, as storage.
Yeah.
So, you know, there was a breakdown there in the communication and the understanding. But yeah, we're doing something in India where we just sold about 80-some latrines and latrines and showers. And, you know, it's so important to health. I mean, imagine, you know, a household for the first time being able to, you know, not only have privacy and the dignity that comes with that, but the cleanliness. I mean, it struck me on this trip in Bangladesh and India, it's just like you're thinking about a 13 or 14-year-old girl hitting puberty with no place to go, you know, and no privacy and no water. And it's yet another sort of component that's completely essential to health. And again, it's achievable. You know, we're for $200 in India, we can build a latrine and a shower.
It'll serve a household. What's so extraordinary is the Indians... The veneration for water in the Ganges River, which is venerated as like the life source, of everything, and it's so contaminated, the water. They play in it, they, you know. They drink it.
It's a spiritual place.
It's a very spiritual place, and yet...
You and I wouldn't set foot in it. We'd probably get violently ill, right?
Yeah, and they're using it in their ceremony. It's extraordinary.
It is.
So it's all educating, and it's also, like you said, it's using the affluence that we have to migrate it on a very personal level.
I think so, and trying to do that, you know, with as much humility as possible, and not walking into villages saying, you know, we know exactly what you need here. It's listening to them. You know, it's talking to mothers about, you know, children that they've lost, and trying to say, well, we actually have a pretty good idea why your kids would have died. It's because of this water here, and it's because of a parasite in their body, or it's simply because they were dehydrated. You know, it's this vicious cycle sometimes, Leslie, of a mom will give, you know, a child bad water, and the child will get diarrhea, and then two things will happen: the child will get more of the same bad water, and eventually die of dehydration, or the mom, you know, out of ignorance, would stop giving the child water, or as much water, to stop the child from having diarrhea. Mm. You know, so you've...
vicious cycle.
You've got this, exactly, a really vicious cycle. You know, and I remember, I'll never forget, I was in Benin, West Africa once, and I saw, I was just walking down the street, and I saw a kid, a little kid that, you know, was not potty trained, there was no hygiene training, walk out the front of a mud hut, and he squatted and he took a crap. And then the chicken came and ate the crap. And that chicken is going to be eaten at some point by that family. And, you know, you need to break that cycle with an understanding and with, you know, sort of compassionate education.
Right.
Because that's easy to stop.
Right.
The kid goes to the toilet and in a latrine in the back, and, you know, the chicken stays with the other chickens. And
right. Yeah. You know, things that we take for granted. It's, the disconnect, I think, for most Americans or most people in democracies and affluent countries is just extraordinary. And when you do travel to third world countries, you see it firsthand. And that's why I can't wait to do the video with you, because I think people really connect when they see you know, not only your images, but you on the ground running and what you do in person, and the joy people can have from not having to walk 5 miles for contaminated water.
Oh gosh, it's the women that are so grateful in these communities. They'll line up, they'll come out 300-500 strong to often to talk about, you know, how that walk was eliminated, how, you know, 5 or 6 hours of their day is gone.
The water exhibit had the water wheels, which I hadn't seen before, these plastic wheels. Young kids and the mother's pool just, over these dusty roads.
That's a new technology I've never seen in Africa, but there's an internal debate whether that makes sense to the office. I think it's the coolest idea.
Yeah, well, so what's the downside
to that? I think they're really heavy. So the thought is that they made them too big, that they weigh like 160 pounds or something, because they carry so much water, and they might be a little unwieldy. But I don't know. I just got an email yesterday. Scott, I think I got you a hippo roller to try out, so for the cost of shipping. So
you're going to
pay the shipping.
Watch for Scott cruising around Soho with his
hippo. That'd be great.
Wouldn't it be great to lead somebody up to Central Park with that? What's your next big event you're planning in the States?
We just did a partnership with all the Theory stores. So they're installing yellow jerry cans, which is how people get their water in most of Africa, and some of my photographs in the stores here in New York on Gansevoort and on Spring Street, and then in Melrose, LA. And then we're doing a big Mother's Day and Father's Day push with Saks Fifth Avenue, who's really gotten behind the mission and wants to build a lot of wealth. And it's a sort of cool concept, help another mother for Mother's Day, or help two mothers, if you will. So that's it. And then we're looking to bring back the outdoor exhibition that you alluded to, and do that again in the fall, in some parks in New York. So, and that'll look a little different, and hopefully be a little cooler and more mature. But last year was crude, and
it was great. It was
we just threw some
wonderful
wood together and put some photos, and it worked. And we sold like 18 grand of water in 10 days.
Now, last year you were at Sundance, and you had a storefront right on Main Street, which I thought was brilliant.
That was amazing. I think we sold $25,000 of water. So it's just, you know, you do enough of these little things, and then you wake up one day, and you're like, oh, wow.
How do we scale this up?
How did we do that?
Yeah. You know? But I think you tapped into a zeitgeist. I think people can relate. Water is such we overuse it, like you said. We overuse it here in America. We just assume that everyone has water.
Yep. Yeah.
So I guess the next trick is to get you on TV, streaming on TV.
Yeah, we'd love to do a video with you guys, and you know, and show it, not tell it, because it's something to see. It's something to see both the great need. It's also something to see the, you know, the joy that can come with clean water.
So what's in store for the rest of 08?
So we'll do these partnerships with some of the retailers and try and get you know, the photos and the words out. We have a huge campaign for September that's going to be really interesting to people. I think you know, I turn 33 and the charity turns 2 years old, and we're going to target 33 villages in Ethiopia. We're actually going to go and identify all 33 villages so that we put a face to them, names, the amount of people that are going to be served. So it's not just a concept, but it's a reality. And then we're going to ask people to help us raise about $120,000, $33 at a time. Or, you know, someone could give $330 a
bit. Right. Or bigger, add a couple more zeros.
And we're also going to ask anyone else who's born in September to help us. We did this last year where, you know, someone that's 11 years old says, hey, I want to raise $11 for my friends. And someone that was 64 said, I'll raise 64. So I will start calling for September birthdays now. If you listened to this and your birthday is in September, email me directly. And
what's your email, Scott? Tell
Scott at info@charitywater.org.
And we'll also have the link on the website as well, so you'll be able to click through, and that'll lead you right to Scott's website as well.
That'll be exciting, and we'll actually go and we'll drill live on our anniversary so people can see those small donations actually having an impact and see that, you know, there is a cause and effect relationship between, you know, money given effectively here and, you know, distributed and spent in the developing world.
Fantastic. Well, Scott, thanks for being on the show. We really... really admire all the work you do. I admire getting the emails once a week and all the updates, all the great work you're doing. And I strongly suggest if you have an opportunity to visit Scott's website, you'll get more of an appreciation of what we just talked about. Plus, you'll be able to share it with your friends. Spread the word, Johnny Appleseed, Scott Harrison.
Look forward to doing something else with you.
Thanks. Talk to you guys soon.
Majibu, njoni kusi.
I'd like to thank Scott Harrison of Charity Water for being our guest today on Culture Catch. If you'd like to see or watch more of Culture Catch, you can check us out in the iTunes directory. Just plug in the word Culture Catch and watch our video podcasts or listen to more of our audio podcasts. And if you want to read written reviews in all areas of the arts, there are plenty of smart culture stories at culturecatch.com. We'll see you soon. Remember, converge is the word.